No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to D20 Dudes, a tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides our topic. I am Dylan.
Molly.
I'm Jenny.
Today, we will not be talking about Goblin with a Fat Ass.
We already talked. What? Okay. All right.
I said we won't. We weren't. We aren't. I'm
all
correct.
All right, well, then stop talking about it.
Talking about what? Goblin with a Fat Ass?
Yeah, just like your mom did last night.
What? Okay, one, adding it to the list. Two, what does that mean?
Cause she was.
Are you?
She was gobbling my dick with her fat ass. I can't believe I have to spell this out to you.
I enjoy that my mom listens to this podcast sometimes.
Well, that will be fun over the holidays.
Well, that's just gonna be have to be like you explaining to her what it means first, even though I just explained it. Because she's dumb.
My mom is not dumb. My mom's like the smartest.
I had to continue with the your mom joke. It just was really apparent and it just came out of me. I'm like your mom joke fountain.
My mom went to college.
Your mom was college.
My mom had 4 kids.
Oh. Oh, holy did you shit. Know that I heard that when you have children your brain shrinks for a period of time and then it grows back more what's the word? Like you make different connections to streamline your brain because of the motherhood
thing. Swole?
No, yeah, your brain kind of gets swole. It gets swollen in a very specific way, and depending on what you're doing while you're pregnant.
So we're talking about the Dark Archive today.
Dark Archive.
It's pretty neat.
Which is I haven't read a whole lot of the Pathfinder 2 supplements. This is still my favorite, and it's probably going to remain my favorite because it's full of weird, spooky shit. And I'm a weird, spooky kind of boy.
Spook. Oh, go ahead.
Like, oh, okay. He was done talking.
All right.
So this whole book, first and foremost, it's an interesting read because a lot of it is from the perspective of, like, in the Pathfinder Society, there was a subsection of it called the Dark Archive. And so one of the archivists is the one writing the book.
That's pretty cool.
It's neat. So there's a lot of, like, little lore tidbits. Like things that are in like the Pathfinder world sprinkled throughout. Stuff that you can use in your game, stuff that you don't necessarily have to. I usually put my games like in not Galarian, but still like they would be fun things to put like in a game regardless because of how interesting and well thought out they are.
Hmm.
And this book has a lot in it, like a lot. There's new classes, there's archetypes for those classes, there's new monsters, new templates, new spells, new feats. New organization. There's so much in this book to the point that before we started recording, I was like, there's a solid chance that this is going to be a 2-episode thing minimum to get it fully covered. And so I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
I realized like writing the outline for this episode, I was like, cool, let's get like all the basics and stuff for like the classes down and all this stuff. And I realized like halfway through writing it, I was like, this is already like 3 pages long. And I'm skipping over so much stuff. I'm going to have to remove like half of everything I've written in the second half. And it's good. This is going to be a big one.
It's going to be a meaty boy.
It's going to be thick.
It's going to be thick. Like that?
Thick. There's so many C's at the end
okay.
of it.
It also has to be said with an F.
So the first of the 2 new classes presented in this book is the psychic. They are. Psychic.
Oh.
As the name might imply.
You don't yeah. say.
That's weird.
They are ostensibly spellcasters, but they got a little bit of extra oomph to them. A little bit extra ka-chow.
Is that because of how thick they are?
Yeah, they got some thickness. Dazzle. They got brain thick.
brain thick.
Brain went on brain, a huge quest.
Big brain. Thick brain.
Swole brain.
Go to school to get swole.
Yo, girl, throw that brain in a circle.
And there's just tiny arms coming off of your brain.
So their key ability score is either going to be charisma or intelligence, depending on a factor we're going to talk about here in a second.
Hmm.
They have the interesting thing going for them where they will replace all verbal components of their spells with thoughts. So silencing them doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they replace material components of their spells with somatic gestures. but it's not the same kind of gestures you would see like another spellcaster do, where you have to make this esoteric arcane symbol with your fingers and then draw the... Nah, it's like a lift up your hand and flick your wrist to like throw something with telekinesis kind of gesture. So as a result of this, they are spellcasters that are very hard to stop from casting spells.
Because you never know when they are.
Yeah, they gonna do stuff, and it's hard to stop them from doing it.
They're sneaky archers of magic.
They specialize in occult spells, which is something that there are a lot of in this book, and that like they do not have to use the cast a spell action to cast occult spells, which is a little bonkers. That's like fun. they just do it as like a single action. Like, whoa, that's strong.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
And they also have what are called psi cantrips, which are, so they have a number of cantrips that they can use as part of their spell repertoire. But the psi cantrips allow them to spend focus points to empower those cantrips, to make them into these mentally powerful spells that are, first and foremost, automatically heightened to half of the psychic's level rounded up. Meaning, no matter the fact that they're cantrips, as the psychic gets stronger, the spell itself gets stronger, the cantrip remains useful.
Yay! I like that. I don't like that cantrips become almost useless.
It is a bit sad for a magic caster. Yeah, so
they do this cool shit where, like, they just do all this stuff with their mind and create magical effects to the point that I believe in the higher levels they can even create like these mental domains. They can like, whoosh, you're in my brain now and you have to fight the inside of my brain in order to like escape from this horrible trap. Like they're pretty bonkers whenever they get to high levels.
That would be beautiful. So many people would die so quickly.
Man, I feel bad for anyone who is like, if someone gets stuck in Dylan's brain, they're just in for a bad time, because it's like this 50-50 mix of I love horrible, awful, terrible shit, and also I'm horny all the time. Oh, it's really going to be like just
like the average sanity 13-year-old doesn't exist boy.
My demon gets bored.
They have a subconscious mind class tree that kind of affects like how their spells manifest and what their key ability score is. So it's like emotional acceptance can be their subconscious mind, gathered lore, precise discipline, the wandering reverie. These are kind of like the core of the personality of the psychic and how it manifests their psychic powers.
Okay.
And they also have a conscious mind class tree, which determines what specific spells they use and have mastery over and how their power manifests. So they have the distant grasp, which is telekinesis. The infinite eye, which is gathering and weaponizing knowledge. The oscillating wave, which is redistributing thermal energy to create heat and cold effects. The silent whisper, which is influencing the minds of others. The tangible dream, which is manifesting thoughts into objects of force or light, Green Lantern-ass style. And the unbound step, which is teleportation and phasing magic.
I like all of them.
It sounds like an incredibly fun class to play. Like, I wish I had someone to run a 2E game so I could run this class.
Dude, I wish I could play that class. Like, if maybe that had been one of my first experiences with Pathfinder rather than the experience I got, I might still be into it.
And if you haven't tried second edition, give that defo a whirl, because I think it's way better than first.
Andy? I don't think I've ever played second edition or first.
Pathfinder second edition is like way more streamlined, way more balanced. The action economy is better.
Yeah.
It's just, it's nice. It's nice all around. The second new class in Dark Archive is the Thaumaturge. They are basically a witcher. They can get a little bit of magic, but for the most part, it's like, for one, their key ability score is charisma. They have an esoteric lore skill that allows them to recall knowledge about haunts, curses, and spooky occult shit. And they have an esoteric implement they deal with the supernatural with. Like, it can be like an amulet or like a chalice. It could be a specific weapon they have, but it's like something that is of significance to them and has some kind of symbological importance to it that allows them to fight monsters. And on top of that, they're always collecting little esoteric bits, bits and bobs to like deal with occult and supernatural entities. So like cold iron nails and like different folk rituals, fragments of scripture, like the bones of saints. They're always just collecting little things like that because like, oh, this could probably hurt something that was supernatural and bad. They have just tons of that stuff all over them. They have a unique action called exploit vulnerability that allows them to use their esoterica to learn the enemy's weaknesses and resistances and potentially even deal magic damage to them, regardless of what kind of weapons or like unarmed things they're doing, just because they know the weakness and can therefore exploit it.
Interesting.
And that, so like there's a role associated with that, and it can be like, this doesn't work and like get a little backlash to it. But like, if you roll a critical success on that, it's like you basically get to see the enemy stat block, which is incredibly useful.
It does sound like useful. It. Yes.
They can use their esoteric implement to improve their damage on strikes. Like they can draw, like if they have their weapon in one hand and their implement in the other hand, they can draw like arcane symbols in the air, and then their strikes will do extra magic damage because they're doing this crazy shit. They have one implement to start with, and that one kind of improves in its quality and usefulness as they level up. And then as they level up, they can also gain more implements. A thaumaturge at a high level can have up to 3 esoteric implements of different kinds and use different actions associated with them as a result. And they also become proficient with literally all armor types as they level up, making them incredibly tough and hard to deal with. They get a little bit of spell casting, they're a little bit martial, and they're very, very utility. So they're, again, I want to play this class. This sounds really fucking fun. There are also dedication feats for both of these classes, which like as you level up and you get feats, you can take a dedication, which basically gives you an archetype. You get access to like a few of the basic class features of these things, things that you, if you spend more feats to get stuff from the dedications as you level up, you get more class features from a secondary class. Thaumaturges and psychics are both in that. So you can be like a primary fighter, but take psychic dedication, or be a bard, but take the thaumaturge dedication. You can kind of pepper these in to different characters if you don't want to completely commit to just being this one class. Moving on from the classes. Oh, sorry. Were you saying something?
Oh, I just said I really like that. Like being able to be like, well, you know, I kind of want to try this out, but I know how to play, I don't know, rogue. So, you know, I'll stick with my rogue, but I'll do a little bit of this too, just to, you know, put my toesies in the water.
At least it makes the classes seem a little more, like, robustly broad compared to before where they were extremely specialized. Does that make sense?
They do a lot of cool stuff with it in second edition too, where like it's not even just different classes that you have archetypes for. There are things that like there are archetypes that you can apply to any class that are basically things that would be really cool to play but don't have classes specifically of their own. Like they wouldn't be able to be built into a full class, so you can just kind of sprinkle them in to like flavor your class with them. Like wrestler is not a class, but you can pick the wrestler archetype on any character and be proficient in grappling and do better stuff that way.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, very nice things. Especially since all of this stuff, like the Pathfinder 2E Foundry module is actually like made by Paizo. So all of this stuff, if you're playing on Foundry, is just integrated into the second edition module. Very helpful. Super handy. Cannot appreciate them enough for that. Moving on from the classes, you have the Aftermath feats. These are so much fun. I actually used these in a game I was running a little while back. These are special feats that a character can take or potentially even be granted after coming in contact with specific things and then surviving.
Ooh.
They have wide and varied usage and utilities and things that they do. And all of them kind of give your character a special lore flavor. They're very good for like kind of fleshing out like what your character is and who they are. Either if you have them as a pre-made character, like what their background was, or if you're using these things during the game, kind of like letting the setting and the things your characters have experienced like flavor them and like change them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple examples being the Devil's Eye, which is the one I actually used in a game. A prerequisite for this one is you have to make a bargain with a devil or win against one in a legal case or a duel of wits.
In a legal case?
Yes, because devils are lawful evil, and there are a lot of devils that attempt to form contracts with people in order to give them some benefit at the cost of their soul or some other horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you do this and you either are granted or take this feat, one of your eyes becomes a devil's eye, where it's like the same color, but the sclera of the eye turns red, and you have like a slitted, horrible, awful demon pupil that glows in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
This skill gives you expertise in legal lore, plus one to all checks when reading or negotiating contracts, and the objection reaction, which allows you to roll twice and take the higher result if you are the target of anything that has a linguistic effect to it.
Sounds very useful.
It's very, very super useful.
And I find just... I'm just imagining this lawyer just going up against one of them and winning, and then now he's the best lawyer ever and makes like lots and lots of money.
I actually granted this one in a game because one of my players had to sign a contract that had a hidden clause in it that said, at any point the devil who he made the contract with can take an item from his inventory, pocket half the money it was worth, and give him only half, and it can be any item he had.
Goodness.
Without his consent. And that was hidden in there. And also he had to pay, I believe, 10% of all of his money with a minimum of 100 gold each month, or the contract was nulled and his soul was sent to hell.
Goodness.
So they sign all this stuff and he gets like all these extra benefits to like his summons and things. And then the captain of their ship is like, all right, man, that does kind of suck for you. I guess I'm just not going to pay you anymore, since all the money on the ship is technically mine.
What?
Yeah, the captain was like, yeah, all of your money is actually mine, so he's not taking any of my money. I can give you some spending money when you go out, but no, all the money on the ship is mine, so he's not taking any of that. I was like, you son of a bitch. So I gave him the devil's eye.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Another example is the Gift of the Horde, which is granted by a dragon after succeeding at an important task for them, usually like getting a very important thing for their horde. It will grant the person who receives the benefit the Dragon Breath Sorcerer Bloodline spell and gives you one focus point to cast it, or increases your focus pool by one if you already have focus points. Mm-hmm. And you can refocus by counting your money.
Nice.
And it also gives them like dragon scales on their extremities and stuff. Like a little bit of like, it doesn't do anything, but it's like nice little flavor.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Now here's one of the big ones. This one's called Fae Life. And this one's like, you got to be pretty high level to have access to this one. This one is granted by a Fae creature after saving them from a terrible fate.
Mm.
Having bonded with this Fae, you can cast the spell Summon Fae as a 7th level innate spell once per day.
That sounds useful.
Pretty useful on its own.
Yeah.
Additionally, the first time you die, you will revive immediately with 27 HP and gaining the Fae trait as your body takes on the superficial traits of the Fae that you bonded.
Oh.
The second time you die, you revive in the first world with the full appearance of the kind of Fae that you bonded, and you're completely unconcerned with your old life. But your friends can bring you back by performing a ritual where they make a shrine to the first world and present the shrine with 3 objects of emotional significance to you in order to bring you back from the first world.
Interesting.
The third time you die, you are revived in the first world as a newborn Fae with no memories of your previous life.
Hmm.
So and you can still be brought back by high-level spells like Wish, which is, like, you know, pretty common anyway. But that's, like, you get 2 free revives, basically.
Yeah. That's actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder you have to be pretty high-level to have that.
Yeah, and that's only three of the ones that were even... There's two pages of these.
Goodness gracious.
Very cool shit. All of them. Super awesome. After that, it goes into cryptids. So there's not, like, cryptids? Specific cryptid monsters.
All right, then.
Cryptids are meant to be kind of like an investigative thing, where you hear about this monster, and now you're going to go hunt it down, or it's, like, doing something, and you got to interrupt it. Cryptids are... template adjustments to monsters. You pick a base creature and you apply the template to the creature to make it into the cryptid.
Oh.
That's
pretty cool. There are too.
Yeah, it's super fun. There's experimental cryptids, which are creatures that were purposefully engineered with like alchemy or magic or some esoteric ritual or clockwork or whatever. They're volatile and imperfect, and they have a list of special capabilities that they can potentially have depending on the type of volatile they are, the type of experiment they were. Mm-hmm. Things that can be like shooting energy waves out of their body or like surging electricity. Depending on what they are, there's just this list of abilities they can potentially have, and you just apply them to the monster as is appropriate.
That's pretty cool.
Mutant cryptids are fucking mutants.
You don't say.
What you see is what you get. They usually look really gross. It can be that they were mutated by some environmental effect, or there was just some like genetic aberration in their lineage. Whatever you want to do with it. But they usually look really gross and weird. They gain damage, or they gain an unusual bane to a specific weird thing, which is really nice for like investigative things, where like some of them, like this mutant cryptid, perhaps, has the bane of a child's laughter. You would have to first figure out what the fuck that is, and like, how would you know that? There's going to be a whole investigative thing to figure that out. But if you figure out that bane, and you bring it and expose the creature to it, they will take mental damage upon coming in contact with it. And that's the bare minimum. Because then they have to make saves, and that can be like they're now flat-footed or stunned for however many rounds because of their bane. They also straight up explode when they die.
Boom.
You kill one and it explodes into like acid or goop. They just blow up. They have an ability to develop resistance to any damage type that harm it. So like if you're a particularly capable fire wizard and you cast a bunch of fire magic on this thing's skin will shimmer into like a red color, and now fire damage is halved against it. If somebody uses a cold magic spell against it next turn, now I'm resistant to cold damage.
It's kind of overkill with the whole exploding thing after they die, too. You're like, not only am I resistant to damage, but also I'll hurt you when I take you out, when I go out, too.
Also, they can shoot bone spikes out of their body.
That's rude. Like, what the fuck?
Mutant cryptids are a little rude. So, like, these things, what it usually does is it imposes a level adjustment. You increase the creature's level by one. You give them a certain AC bonus. You give them a certain health bonus, depending on what level you're improving them to. It kind of just depends on how strong the base creature is and how strong you're intending to make them from there is what the exact bonuses are, which is why I didn't just cover them. But that's kind of across the board. All the cryptids get that thing.
That's something else.
Mm-hmm.
So many ideas are just floating through my brain, and I don't know.
Oh, we still got two cryptid types to cover. There's still two more.
Doyle, get on it.
The primeval cryptids. I really like this one, especially because of the artwork that's in the book. They're like ancient versions of a creature that exists. They're like usually giant and super good at surviving. They're like the big, bad, best version of that creature. The artwork in the book is like this fucking 10-foot tall wolf with like swords and spears sticking out of its back. It's cool as hell. They are super big, they are super strong, they are super hard to kill, they are stanky. They have an aura of stench that can nauseate anyone who gets too close to them. They have an arsenal of weapons from people who have tried to kill it in the past but failed. So like, again, there's like spears, swords, axes, all kinds of stuff stuck in its body where people have failed to kill it in the past. Getting too close to this thing means that it can just start beating the shit out of you with those things sticking out of its body, because like, man, don't grapple something that is part sword.
Yeah.
They are
makes sense.
They're big enough that by stomping the ground, they can create shockwaves to knock people down and deal damage. And whenever they reach zero HP for the first time, they can heal themselves by using a second wind ability. They give themselves a ton of HP and they get right back into the fight because they're just super hard to kill.
I'm loving this, especially the mental image I have right now.
The wolf with sword sticking out of its back is one of the coolest things I've seen in a book in terms of art. Pathfinder and like Paizo, they always hire like all these really good artists to do all their stuff for them. So I'll actually like send a picture of this after we're done here.
Okay.
And then on top of all of this, there's like a whole host of different like magical items over like the next 7 or 8 pages, like magical items that were made from sling cryptids, special feats that you can take after interacting with a cryptid or being somebody who hunts cryptids or after a cryptid has cursed you. There's like all these different things that have to do with here's how a cryptid can fucking mess with you, even if it's not there. Because if you take any of these feats or any of these magical items, they usually have some kind of detrimental effect to them. And it's not necessarily like a horrible mechanical effect. It's not like you like have reduced AC or anything like that. But it's usually like something really weird happens around you. Like you're wearing this thing and you've worn it for so long that the cryptid's kind of got its cryptidness on you. And now color drains from the area around you and everything kind of sucks. Or like you're always like super stanky and oily. You're just kind of gross and weird to deal with because you've got cryptid juice all over you.
Gross. Could they try not to do that? That's disgusting.
It's cribbids.
That's rude.
But like juice could be any one of bodily fluids. I just like it.
Man, we're already at our time and we've covered like 3 of the things in this book.
I love it.
So
yeah,
it is going to be a second episode. You didn't have to like question yourself about it.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be at least 2 episodes. I'll real quickly kind of go through some of the secret societies it then covers. Because like it gives you an overview of kind of like what a secret society is, how they operate in the shadows, that each one has like a specific goal that they're trying to accomplish. And these are the methods they use to accomplish those goals in order to like help you kind of form your own and create your own web of intrigue. Some of the examples it gives are the Cat and Mouse Society, which is a shadowy organization of assassins who will like pick a target and they love the thrill of the hunt. That's all they care about is like, I'm going to hunt down this target. And that's all that matters to me is killing them, proving that I'm the best. I am the predator and they're the prey. There's the Exarchite of the Infinite Clock, which is basically just the fucking, what are they called? That one SCP organization that's all about clockwork. The Church of the Broken God.
I don't remember. I'm not that big of a nerd on SCPs.
They're basically that. Their whole thing is there are these cabals of usually no more than like 12 who they will just like kidnap victims to replace their brains and various body parts with like clockwork to achieve an arcane apotheosis, which almost always fucking fails. Almost always fails.
Probably because clockwork is really cool, but the reason why everyone is using electronic stuff is because it's better.
Like I said, almost.
If they wanted to take over the world, why didn't they optimize?
They're not trying to take over the world. They're trying to apotheosis. They're basically trying to, I believe,
you're just being
obtuse on
my question.
They don't go into specifics. Like this is my supposition on this, but I'm pretty sure the reason they're kidnapped, so they don't put these clockwork things in their own brains. They only do it to other people. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they're trying to perfect the technology so they can then do it to themselves. But they're basically just trying to elevate people's potential by
they're trying to elevate
by
experimenting. Spring.
Yeah, they're. In other words, they're a bunch of insane word. Fucking psychopaths.
That's creepy. I dislike that. Can you tell them to stop, please?
No, because
you know, it's
I'm
like
definitely
when you show your mom a meme and she goes, "Do you know this person?"
I'm definitely not part of their organization and cannot get in contact with them. Please do not ask me this again.
Weird. That sounds like something someone that's definitely in that organization would say.
The Esoteric Order of the Palatine Eye is a not-so-secret organization focused on enlightenment and potentially elevating themselves to godhood. They're technically a secret society, but I say technically in that they're really not all that fucking secret.
Mm-hmm.
They have this massive hierarchical organization that is, from what people could tell, very corrupt, like from the top down. And they also believe that certain knowledge is forbidden, and if anyone starts getting too close to that knowledge, they will relentlessly hunt them down.
It's okay, they're only a secret organization because their neon sign didn't come in yet.
Sure. Also, each one of these secret societies, there are special gear you can get from them, feats you can have by being part of their organization, spells and services you can get from them depending on how they operate, and if characters know of and are part of the organization, they can do things like having these special trinkets that will like show people like, hey, show this little symbol and you know I'm part of this organization, to being able to influence the political landscape of a region. It's something you can purchase from them.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, they have all kinds of strings they can pull in the background. But yeah, so we'll cover the rest of this in next week's episode. I'll probably add some more to it because I actually kind of like, listen, this last section I need to just not cover because I'm going to run out of time. So I'm going to add that in because we have to do another episode anyway.
Yeah.
Next week we will continue talking about the Dark Archive because I actually really like this book. There's a lot of like spooky stuff in it. There's a lot of like intrigue.
It sounds very cool. I like it.
The next section is actually the deviant abilities, which is my favorite part of the book because it's like I'm going to be the guy. So we'll start with that next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to find us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/d20dudes. If you want to find us on a Twitter, you can do that at twitter.com/d20dudes or at d20dudes on the Twitter. If you would like to support the podcast monetarily, patreon.com/d20dudes, just $3 a month will get you a shout out on every episode like we are going to do for my friends here, Molly and Jennifer.
Yay.
Word, Jenny's boyfriend.
Mine.
Ken Thomas and Zam Wow. All cold dudes who give me money.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason.
Because you're cool. You're also a cool dude.
Yeah. You guys buy me lunch once a month.
Yay!
And if you would like to join us in the Discord, say hi, hang out with us, and make fun of us or whatever, there's a link to that down in the description, because Discord links, unless you have the custom links, are a bunch of nonsense.
Yes.
So next week we will continue talking about the Dark Archive. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.